Hi, I'm Mal Majoros. I am an 8-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. Today we are talking about the Complete Cancer Organizer. It is from the Cleveland Clinic's Cancer Answer Line, which is, that's a mouthful right there. I have one of the advanced practice nurses who answers the line, Jamie Schwachter. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
You did.
All right. So before we get into the book, tell me a little bit about your background.
Okay, so I have been a nurse for about 23 years, a nurse practitioner for about 15 years. And Josette, who is my partner in crime and the co-author of the book, we work in the cancer answer line at the Cleveland Clinic. And so basically what we do, we're both advanced practice nurses, and we answer the phone all day long. And it's a free service to anyone and everyone that speaks English. It's the only language I speak to talk about cancer. So we even have doctors and nurses calling to ask questions about clinical trials and so forth. But yeah, patients, their caregivers, friends, sometimes people that don't want to give us their names, which is fine. Anonymous callers are fine as well. But so we answer the cancer answer line all day long and answer questions. And we also have a website called chemocare.com, which we are the co-administrators of, and we write all the content here with the doctors at the Cleveland Clinic, and that's a free service to people out there as well.
And it's free to anyone, not even if they've been treated at the Cleveland Clinic, just anyone out there who can speak English.
Correct.
And dial
yeah.
a phone.
Yeah, we get calls from all over the world, actually, and they don't have to be treated here at the clinic. And we obviously don't offer medical advice, but we answer
right.
questions.
Yeah, that's important to note. When you call an answer line, you always want to make sure your doctor approves of anything that somebody says, whether it's nutrition or vitamins or anything like that. You always want to check with your doctor just in case.
Most definitely. You know, we tell people, too, when they're first diagnosed, stay off the Internet. And
you know, my doctor told me that, and I was like, oh, yeah, whatever. And then I read about my breast cancer, and I thought my head was going to pop off. And my fiancé was like, now, didn't she tell you not to do that? I was like, yes. So it is true. Knowledge is a powerful thing, but right when you're diagnosed, you know, just let everything soak in. You know, talk to your family, talk to your spouse, your support level, all your people before you go looking on and find Dr. Google and be like, oh, my God, I have malaria, too. What?
I know. There's a lot of crazy things out there now on the web. There are reputable sites, obviously, and we
yes.
give those out to people. But, yeah, there's a lot of blogs and people talking about the cure for cancer
mm-hmm.
and whatnot, which can really be hurtful and very scary.
It is, especially if you want a second opinion, you want to go to a reputable doctor, you can go to the Cleveland Clinic, you can go to another doctor in your area. That's what I always say, get a second opinion. I'm not a medical doctor. I'll give great advice, but like I always said, get your doctor's opinion. And always get a second opinion if you're not.
Definitely. And we really encourage that. People will call and say, you know, when should I get a second opinion or should I get a second opinion? And I always tell people, you know, this is cancer that you're dealing with. It's not strep throat.
Right.
You go to another doctor, they're going to do the strep test, they're going to come up with the same thing. This is cancer. You know, this is life or death.
Mm-hmm.
And, some people are really afraid that they're going to upset their doctor. Their doctor's going to be upset with them, mad at them, that they're getting a second opinion. But if you have a really good oncologist, a really good doctor, they're going to actually encourage you to get a second opinion.
Exactly.
They want you to know that you have looked down, all avenues, have done the research, and that you feel comfortable with your decision.
And I would also question a doctor who didn't want you to get a second opinion. In my opinion, because you want them to go, okay, well, I will, send it out to, I'm in Michigan, so send it out to U of M or maybe the Mayo Clinic or like Cleveland Clinic, get a second opinion. And if your doctor, I always tell people, if you're not comfortable with your oncologist, wherever that is, they work for you. So you always, find your doctor, your caregiver, your nurses, everybody that you're very comfortable with.
Yeah, a couple good points there. We get people that say, well, I'm calling because my doctor doesn't have time, or I'm afraid to ask the questions. this is the time where you need to know what's going on. You need to know the plan and you need to know why. So we always tell people, write down all of your questions before your appointment. Take someone with you.
Yes.
Not only support, but, you know, instead of two eyes and two ears more than yours, definitely can help because, you know, as you know, when you're stressed out or emotional and anxious, you don't retain all that information.
Exactly. And it's very hard for even if it's your spouse. My fiance go with me and he was taking copious notes, and all of your smartphones now have recorders on them. Just make sure you tell your doctor, you know what, I'm nervous. My boyfriend, caregiver, father is nervous. I'm going to record this. So if I have any questions later, I want to be able to ask you in an informed manner.
Definitely. And obviously the doctor has to know about it.
Well, yes.
You're recording and ask their permission. But I mean, the majority, most of the doctors will say, that's fine. I want you to record it. I want you to go home and listen to the conversation. You know, it's a new age that we have here. We have all of these tools and we need to use them.
Exactly. And it's not just notepads and pen and paper like my fiance was using. So you can, you know, you can use anything like that to help out. I think I actually had a little voice recorder when I went in to see one of my cardiologists.
Yeah, and sometimes, too, it's going home and looking up exactly what the terms mean.
Oh, yes. It's funny. I went to a cardiologist one time, and he was asking me all these questions, and I was asking him other questions, and he was like, are you sure you're not in the medical field? Because you know all these things. But let's start. I just get diagnosed with cancer, and I call you, and I'm like, oh, my God. I just found out I had breast cancer. What now?
Yeah. So typically, you know, I want to know more about the person. So how do you know you're diagnosed? And, you know, where are you in this process? Did you see something on the mammogram today and they told you need to come back for a biopsy? Have you had a biopsy? Are you scheduled to see an oncologist? You know, where are you? I want to know where you're at in this process. And then, you know, based on that, okay, so... and the cancer organizer outlines this as well from the biopsy all the way through survivorship that it's kind of like, okay, let's take a deep breath. And this is what cancer is, and this is what you're dealing with, and typically this is what happens next. I think, too, we like to have plans. You know, we like to make a plan. We like to know exactly what's going on. And sometimes, especially when you're waiting on a biopsy, if you're, you know, right at the start of this, and you're waiting on the biopsy results, you know, people want to know right now, what do I do right now?
Right.
Will I be out of work? How this will affect my life, my relationships, my family? Everyone wants to know all the information right now, but it's kind of, okay, let's take this the first step. And sometimes it's just a day at a time, one day at a time.
Well, and like someone told me, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, so you won't know what's going to happen to yourself in maybe mile number 12. You know, you might get, if you use a marathon analogy, like a leg cramp. So you have to adjust your marathon to that. So you won't know right away, like everything right at the start, which, you know, we all, in a perfect world, we'd all like to know.
Right. And I think, too, knowing just general information. Okay, so you're waiting on the biopsy. You know, that could take 7 to 10 days and sometimes even longer if they're doing the genomic testing, some different types of testing that we have available to us now. So it may take longer. And because your biopsy isn't back, the results aren't back within 7 to 10 days, it doesn't mean there's something extra crazy going on. It just means this takes time. So I think sometimes knowing why things are taking so long, knowing that they may take as long as, you know, because you get a biopsy, you think within 2 days you'll have the results back. But, you know, that's not always true.
No, it isn't. That's a good point. I mean, a lot of people don't think about that. Now we have genomic testing. I had the BRCA test, which was just came out. Luckily, I was negative, but that was all new. You know, like genetic testing, that's kind of wild. But I had the, I had the regular biopsy. I had a lumpectomy. So... stereotactic biopsy, and then it's the waiting that is the hardest part. And I think the best thing is like to call your hotline and be like, okay, well, I'm waiting, you know, like you said, take a deep breath. Maybe it's hard not to have your mind focused on it, but, you know, maybe learn more information. Or if your head feels like you're going to explode, have your friend, your fiance, your mother, your dad, like, read up on some information for you and help you out. Because like you said, you don't want to read up on everything right away, because you're like, oh my God, this person died from this, and this happened to them, and everything that happens to other people won't necessarily happen to you when you're going through your treatment. And I think television and movies kind of put that bad rap on cancer patients, because that's what you always see, the bald, sallow, sad-looking person in the hospital bed, and then at the end of the movie, they're dead. And that doesn't happen, thank goodness, to most cancer survivors.
No, there are so many treatable cancers, cancers that weren't even treatable 5 years ago. I mean,
exactly.
We've really come such a long way in a short amount of time. And I think, too, you made a good point in saying that, you know, listening to other people and their stories. I always tell people, don't get on the internet and don't listen to other people because you don't know, you know, people will say, well, my cousin's sister's friend had this, mm-hmm. and this is what happened, but you don't really know exactly what kind of cancer and what kind of treatment. And also, too, even if someone has lung cancer, mm-hmm. there's a couple different types of lung cancer, and then within those types, there's subtypes. So, you know, cancer has changed where we can actually kind of tailor the treatment, and so the treatments have changed, and everyone's an individual, and the one medication will affect the next person maybe completely differently.
And that's one thing you have to tell survivors. It's like, oh my God, I mean, okay, I didn't believe the nurse when she said my hair would fall out in 2 weeks because I thought I'd be that 1%. No. Chances are if the nurse says, you know, in 2 weeks, your hair is probably going to fall out. My one advice to anybody who they say your hair is probably going to fall out, shave your head or get your hair cut short. Because for me, that was traumatic. It might not be for everybody, but for women, I know that's a traumatic deal.
It is. And I also teach chemotherapy education classes here.
Yeah.
And so we get a lot of those questions, too, up front. Okay, mm-hmm. how is this going to affect me? And one of the number one questions is, am I going to lose my hair? And it's not only women. You know, I always think women.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say to men, well, you know, bald is in. But
yes.
They choose not to be bald because they have hair. So,
right.
You know, it can be detrimental to them as well.
You must get a lot of questions about, like, when people have their chemo, you know, okay, well, am I going to get nauseous? Like you said, you see on TV, the typical cancer survivor that you see in a movie or television is always sick, always throwing up. And for me, that wasn't the case. I mean, did I feel great? No. But I wasn't throwing up every 10 minutes. Do you get a lot of questions about, well, how will this chemo affect me? Or in theory, how will it affect me? And what are the types of medications or antiemetics that I can take to stop that from happening?
Yes. And so we do get a lot of questions, especially from chemocare.com. There's a number on there that rings to us as well.
Oh, awesome.
So people ask about side effects and what to expect. And so, you know, we can go through, you know, the top 10 side effects, let's say. This is just a hypothetical.
Right.
And say, though, you know, it may be 30%, but you may not be in that 30%. And even if you do get this side effect, there are things that your treatment team can do for you,
mm-hmm.
such as medications they can give. And there's other things that you can do to help yourself. And in the book, The Complete Cancer Organizer, it talks about all of those side effects and not only what your physicians can do for you, but also what you can do for yourself to help prepare yourself
mm-hmm.
and help get through those side effects.
And I think before anyone is ever diagnosed with cancer, just being healthy and exercise, even if it's just walking 30 minutes a day. My doctor said, I play hockey, so my doctor said, oh, you working out for the season really helped you get through chemo more than other people. So just being in good health in general before you even have to worry about cancer is everyone's top priority.
Most definitely. You know, we get people call that don't have cancer and they say, you know, well, what can I do to help, you know, protect myself or
mm-hmm.
prevent cancer, or what's a cancer diet? And, you know, there's really no cancer anti-cancer
right.
diet. It's the Mediterranean diet that we
right.
should be following anyway, which is, you know, high in vegetables and lean meats, lean proteins, low in sugar, no
mm-hmm.
alcohol, you know, no smoking, you know, all those things that we know. And then, two, I think that we need to get our you know, routine testing done. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, following
oh,
the
yes.
guidelines of when to get your mammogram and your colonoscopy and pap smears and all of that. I think it's easy for us nowadays, working and taking care of people and so forth in our lives, that we forget. And, you know, mammogram, you're a year
mm-hmm.
overdue. And so I think it's really important to keep up on that stuff. And just, like you said, take care of yourself. And, you know, the American Cancer Society puts out all these guidelines of exercising,
mm-hmm.
you know, 30 minutes a day. I think they even may have increased it. But, you know, whatever it is, you can find something that you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, you like to play hockey.
Right. Exactly. Something like that. And I'm always fascinated by people who say, well, you know, they tell me, well, I don't feel sick, so I don't think I should go to the doctor. And it's like, well, I didn't feel sick. And I just happened to catch it during a routine. Well, I felt the lump, but, you know, they found all the other information after my regular general physical. So, yeah. I mean, I'm the perfect person to say, well, you're not, yeah, I don't feel sick. Well, that doesn't matter. You know, if you don't have time to go to the doctor, don't, let me tell you this, you don't want to have cancer. That'll take a lot of time out of your life.
Yeah, definitely. I think, too, cancer, for the most part, doesn't cause pain and doesn't cause symptoms
right.
until it's grown to a point where you can either feel it
mm-hmm.
or it's, you know, causing shortness of breath or whatever pain. But, you know, in the beginning, it doesn't cause any symptoms. And so, like you said, people say they feel great, but things can be happening inside of us that we don't know.
It's true. It's true. So now what would be now that somebody has cancer, what would be one of the most important things you would tell them now that they're living with cancer?
I think number one is to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've kind of outlined in the book questions, example questions to ask not only your medical oncologist, radiation oncologist, surgeon, but also your primary care provider. They need to be involved as well, you know, because we look at the person as a whole person holistically, and so not just the cancer. So I think, you know, making lists of questions, getting those answered, having the knowledge. And I think number two is having support. You know, whoever that may be, whether it's your spouse,
mm-hmm.
your partner, child, friend, parent, someone in your life that you can lean on, and not only emotionally, but sometimes there might be a point in time where, you know, you need someone to go to the pharmacy for you.
Right.
And I always tell people, especially we get these men, these stoic men, in our chemo education classes, and some women as well that are very independent and have jobs and, you know, run the household, and it's kind of like, okay, at this point in time,
mm-hmm.
your job is to fight your cancer. Yes, there's all that other stuff, and we'll help you manage that stuff, but you're not the main caregiver right now. If you
right.
have a point person in your life, let them take care of you. You know, this is the time where you need to be taken care of. So, you know, as far as, like, pushing yourself and I, you know, I think, too, communication
mm-hmm.
with not
oh,
only
yes.
your support system, but also your physicians. So we kind of outline, too, in the book about important conversations, you know, who to talk to and how to talk to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's important, especially talking to your children, because that's mm-hmm. could be kind of hard to talk to your children. And even like you said, your friends and relatives, I tell people, you know what, swallow your pride. If somebody says, hey, I want to go shopping for you or make you dinner, you know, make sure it's something that they can eat. You know, Nana's lasagna might not be very good for you after chemo. But if they want to do something for you, people want to help you, just say, okay, good, yes. So I think
definitely.
Because people want to help you. And I, not that they would feel taken aback, but looking back on it, if I had just let people say, do some things for me, I think it would have been a little different. And I just think people want to help you and they're your friends and they want to do something. You know, even just the littlest thing, hey, can I pick up your prescription, like you said, or maybe take you some hot soup or watch a movie with you, not even talk about cancer, just hang out with you for the day. I mean, I think that's something important that your caregiver and your friends can help you out with.
Yeah, definitely. I have a neighbor who has breast cancer, and they're young. I mean, I think she's 35,
mm-hmm.
and they have a cooler outside of their door. We live in a condo. And so there's a lot of us in a row, but they have a cooler sitting out there. And my husband said, what's that cooler for? And I said, it's for people to bring food where they don't even have to bother the person. They don't
oh, I
have,
like
they
that.
Just ring the doorbell and there's the meal in there and they put it in the oven and it's ready.
Oh, I like that.
So, you know, they don't even have to talk to the person. Sometimes all these people calling and emailing and
mm-hmm.
wanting to know how you are, you know, I mean, that gets exhausting
that's,
too.
Yeah, that's... For me, I mean, a lot of people will have the best intentions, but if you're the 10th person to ask, oh, how are you doing? You know, I actually went off on someone. It wasn't their fault, but it's just like, no, I want to know about your day. Tell me about your mundane day at work or some new TV show that you watched. Because when you're in that cancer bubble, that's other things that people may not realize, that cancer might be the last thing that person wants to talk about.
Exactly. You know, we kind of talk about cancer etiquette, we call
yes.
it a little bit, about maybe what to say, what not to say. And, you know, I think it's important people always say, well, how do I talk to them or what do I ask? Well, this is your friend or this is your partner or whatever
right.
relationship you have with that person. You know, cancer, they're not their cancer,
mm-hmm.
I guess is what I'm trying to say. they're still the person they were and are, and you know, say, hey, do you want to talk about it? Yeah, I don't think we're frank enough with each other.
We're not.
You know, it's kind of like, just ask the question. Hey, do you want to talk about what's going on with you? If not, let's talk about, you know, this movie we're going to go see.
Exactly. Or don't tell me that your Aunt Susie died from the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually had a relative, my old boss, I saw her at the grocery store, and she's like, oh, I heard you had cancer. She's like, are you going to die? I'm like, well, I'm not planning on it, not right here in the parking lot, but, you know, it's like one of those kind of things where, like, I know you're my friend and all, but that's, you know, are you going to die? Well, not for another 50 years, I hope.
Right, I'm not planning on it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's some of the things that people don't think about. That's in the book where, you know, how to talk to your family or your friends who have cancer. You know, that's one of the things that's definitely something people need to think about for sure. Now, one of the things that when I was going through treatment, and luckily a friend of mine had told me about it and I didn't think about it, was what I should wear when I had chemo, because I had a port. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Yeah, we answer some of those questions. Things mm-hmm. that you don't think about until you're getting ready to go, and it's like, oh, gosh, one more thing I have to worry about. What do I wear?
Right.
You know, sometimes it's that little thing that kind of sets us off and ruins the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of talk about little things like that. And you can wear your regular clothes as long as they can get to your arm or to your port if you
mm-hmm.
have a port.
Right.
They're not going to change you into a gown and make you feel cold and put you on a steel table, you know. They're going to put you in a lounge chair. You're going to have blankets if you want them. I always tell people to dress in layers because it might be cold. And
mm-hmm.
also the fluid, you know, the actual chemotherapy liquid going into you is cold.
Yes.
It's a lot colder than our body temperature. And so you might get cold from that. So layers are good. Something that covers your head if you
mm-hmm.
don't have any hair, covering your neck, hands, feet, especially if you have neuropathy. So, you know, just your regular clothes and be comfortable.
Yeah, I found when my friend told me when you have a port, it's good, well, at least for me anyway, to have like a polo shirt on so they can get to the port a little easier. That's my
yeah.
port was on the chest. So, I mean, other people have ports in different places. But, I mean, that was a good tip that a friend of mine that I would not have thought about at all. You know,
yeah, you don't think about those things. You know, people will call and say, well, can I eat? You can eat. You can eat. You know, sometimes
mm-hmm.
people are here 8 hours getting treatment. It might be a long treatment, and of course you can eat. We definitely want you to
eat.
Oh, yes. You know, calories, hydration, and protein are so important during chemotherapy.
And you have good tips about nutrition in your book as well.
Definitely. You know, we've had a lot of help, you know, with answering questions, and we actually have a dietitian here who sees our patients, which is great. But, yeah, nutrition is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the top three things to think about is hydration,
mm-hmm.
fluids, and calories and protein.
Yeah, because even when I was diagnosed 8 years ago, I had to ask to see a nutritionist. And their advice was kind of lackluster. And I was like, okay, well, I'll just, you know, figure it out. Because I was eating pretty well, like I said, because I work out and stuff. So, but still, I mean, that's something you don't really think about. Okay, well, tomato sauce, for example, love the Italian food,
mm-hmm.
not on chemotherapy.
Right.
Because it's very acidic and it can hurt your stomach. So there are some things like your cruciferous vegetables, and, you know, I would always have just pasta the day of chemo, but that was just my choice. Something that's very low key, so I didn't want my stomach to like freak out after.
Definitely. So something, you know, kind of bland,
mm-hmm.
but definitely eat. You want to have food in
oh,
your
yes.
stomach. We tell people not to eat their favorite meal because then if you are nauseous, your brain kind of puts two and two together and you won't like that anymore.
Exactly. Oh, look, here's my favorite lasagna. Blah. Yeah,
exactly.
You definitely
exactly.
don't.
So we talk about, you know, what foods maybe not to eat.
Mm-hmm.
How to carry around crackers and cookies. And,
yes.
you know, it's kind of like one of those things when you're nauseous, you don't eat, you have an empty stomach. It's like a snowball effect.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
So, yeah, definitely.
And one of the things that I know that a good tip for me, and it's in the book, is when you're having your chemo, suck on either a mint or a lemon drop, because it
mm-hmm.
does give that metallic taste in your mouth. And if you still get that metallic taste through your chemo, use plastic silverware so it doesn't, like, keep on giving you that metallic taste.
Yeah, so there's a lot of years of experience
mm-hmm.
behind a lot of these tips that we give. So not only have we read about them, you know, we've talked to patients about these things, you know, we know what works for some people. So all of those tips are in the book.
And there's a lot of great tips. I mean, a lot of things that just when you're going through treatment, you don't want to necessarily think about, but you should. Because, like, what do you do when you go back to work? For me, it was kind of weird because I was waiting tables at the time as well as working here. So I couldn't wait tables with, you know, after having the surgery on the breast and everything. So I did other things. And, you know, your work might change a little and people still might freak out at work. And I think having maybe telling your workmates, well, if you're not sure, you know, call my good friends, Jamie and Josette over there at the Cleveland Clinic, and they can have any, if there's any questions you can ask. I mean, I think the big thing about people who see other people with cancer is they're, like, afraid to talk to them because they might, not that we think that we might catch it, but it's just very scary, and it's not something that people are used to.
It is, and I think sometimes going into a conversation, I know myself, I have to say, okay, is this about me?
Right.
No, it's not. So I need to put my fear aside and do what's right, you know, for the person.
Well, speaking of that, what's some of the stories that have stuck out with you?
Well, you know, we've had people that kind of build a relationship with us sometimes,
mm-hmm.
and so I've had, you know, a couple of people that have called, and they'll keep calling, you know, and I've talked to this one woman in Florida now, I think for 3 years. She'll check in once a month, and so, you know, it's kind of one of those things. You hit it off with someone on the phone. I've never met her, but, you know, we still keep in touch. And so through her cancer experience, she didn't have a lot of support. And I think so reaching out to us, she felt like she had someone to talk to. And obviously we helped her with some resources as well, you know, with a buddy system that she could talk to people on the phone that have gone through the same type of experience. We have one of those support networks here called the Fourth Angel.
Oh.
But, you know, a lot of the stories, I think it really... I talk to people all day, and sometimes it's a 2-minute conversation. They just want some information. And sometimes it's a 20-minute conversation where they call to ask a quick question. And, you know, they have someone on the phone that's listening to them that's not related to them,
mm-hmm.
not emotionally involved. And they kind of just spill it all. And, you know, by the end of the conversation say, yeah, I really, you know, of course, people apologize for crying.
Right.
It's like, don't apologize. You know, it's good to get your emotions out.
Exactly.
But at the end of the conversation, they say, you know what, this really helped me. And it's not that, like I said, we give medical advice or anything, but I think talking about things.
Yes, definitely.
Helps you reach a conclusion.
And I think, you know, with calling your care line, the most important thing is getting those emotions out, even if you're upset about something. Like, I can't eat the foods that I want to eat, or my hair's not growing out as fast as it can, you know, you and Josette can give a welcome ear to Ben, whereas someone else may be like, well, I don't know what to tell you. You know,
right.
that really doesn't help if you talk to your friend and they're just like, I gotta go.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, it's anonymous for
mm-hmm.
some people. They don't
right.
get their name, that's fine. We get a lot of questions sometimes that they're afraid to ask their physician.
Mm-hmm.
About, you know, sex or
mm-hmm.
things they forgot to ask their physician.
Right.
About, you know, can I work while I'm on chemo? So we get a lot of those things, but usually it's more what to expect.
Right.
What can I expect from chemo? What can I expect from radiation?
You can get really tired.
Yes. Fatigue is the number one side effect from all of these treatments, most definitely.
Yes. And I had no idea that there were several different types of fatigue until I had chemo and radiation.
Mm-hmm. There are. You know, it's not the fatigue where you could fall asleep just because you're sleepy. It's that fatigue that my body is not cooperating with me.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and just like that, we have run out of time. Look how fast this half hour has gone. So
I could talk to you forever.
I know. This has been a great conversation and very informative. So people want to get hold of you, Jamie. Where can they give you a call?
They can call the Cancer Answer Line at 866-223-8100.
Mm-hmm.
The book, The Complete Cancer Organizer, is on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and any other online bookstore.
Right.
And then chemocare.com is our website that gives all the information in layperson's terms about chemotherapies. And it's all up to date, and everything's verified and edited by Cleveland Clinic physicians.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Jamie. If you hang on, I'm going to wrap it up like I usually do. This is Mel Majoros. I am the Cancer Warrior. You can always find me on Facebook because I'm a Facebook junkie. Follow me on Twitter at Mel Majoros. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's the Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.